How to survive Pompeii. Let's say you want to spend a warm summer day at a peaceful seaside hub of Roman life. You want to walk fountain-lined streets, practice your Latin, play dice, snack on olives, and drink local wine made from grapes grown in fantastically rich volcanic soils. So you travel to the port town of Pompeii on August 24th, 79 CE, and you arrive sometime between the hours of 9 and 10 a.m. That will give you enough time to explore and maybe even grab a loaf of bread for breakfast at the local bakery. But it will also put you in Pompeii in time to experience a 5.9 magnitude earthquake, hear a distant boom echo through the streets, and see a black cloud rise from the nearby Mount Vesuvius. You'll watch as the towering volcano begins to disgorge 1.5 million tons of molten rock per second and release 100,000 times the thermal energy of the Hiroshima bomb. All while you stand a mere 6 miles away. Your situation seems challenging, but surprisingly, it's not hopeless. When I emailed Pier Paolo Petrone, a forensic anthropologist at the University of Naples Federico II, asking if any Pompeians survived the eruption, he wrote back to say that many did, but likely only those who took immediate action. Unfortunately, instead of immediately evacuating, some Pompeians took shelter from the falling ash. This may seem prudent, but it is a mistake. Fortunately, you'll have time to leave because the early stages of Vesuvius's eruption were not the most dangerous. The pressurized magma inside the magma chamber contained dissolved gas, and cracking Vesuvius's vent had the same effect as opening a gargantuan can of soda. The dissolved, superheated gases rushed out of solution and blasted through the volcano's narrow vent at supersonic speeds. The effect was like a jet engine. As lava and searing gas blasted out of the mountain, the towering hell furnace sucked in the surrounding cool air, heated it, and created a rushing upward lift of superheated air that screamed toward the stratosphere. This is good. The cloud was hot enough to melt lead, and the high atmosphere was the safest place for it. Eventually, these molten rock chunks cooled and fell, and because the wind on August 24th blew south-southwest, they dropped on Pompeii. At first, the initial pieces of lava fell like snow, but as the eruption continued, their density gradually increased until these pieces of pumice came down with enough size and ferocity to collapse houses. But that took hours. You still have time. Do not linger, however, because within Mount Vesuvius, another, even more dangerous process began to take place. As the gases within the magma chamber depleted, the eruption lost power. This may sound like a positive development. It is not. When the mix of hot ash and gas in a volcanic cloud becomes too dense, its column will collapse. Instead of rising miles into the atmosphere, it will rise only a few hundred feet and then fall. As the cloud descends, it accelerates, so that when it reaches the ground, it flows like a superheated sandstorm moving at Autobahn speeds. These pyroclastic flows can be 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit, dense enough to suffocate you, and extend for miles. In the early morning hours of August 25th, a pyroclastic flow killed everyone remaining in Pompeii. You need to leave long before then. As to where to go, you have two choices. Mountains block your path to the east, and the Mediterranean Sea blocks your escape to the west. You could try to wait for a boat at the beach, but A, archaeologists have found a large group of bodies in a boathouse in nearby Herculaneum who appear to have attempted just that. B, the prevailing winds are against you. And C, earthquakes sloshing the Bay of Naples cause repeated tsunamis. Your only two viable options, Petroni tells me, will be to run north toward Naples or south toward the town of Stabiae. There are issues with both, but fortunately, none of those issues involves melting in a river of lava. This fear is natural in any volcanic eruption, but generally misplaced. Depending on its composition, lava ranges from 10,000 times to 100 million times the viscosity of water, which means even the runniest molten rock has the viscosity of room temperature honey. Unless you're on a very steep slope, you can generally outrun it. These fiery rivers flatten stationary objects like houses, but people can move out of the way, says Stephen Self, a volcanologist at UC Berkeley. Usually. Instead, it's the magma beneath the mountain and its precise composition that should deeply concern you. Different types of magma produce dramatically different eruptions. Watery magmas won't build up nearly as much pressure as thicker varieties and don't contain nearly as much gas, which means when they erupt, they usually ooze rather than bang. A viscous magma, on the other hand, doesn't flow nearly as easily. These magmas require more pressure before they erupt and therefore usually erupt less frequently. But when they do, they explode. Unfortunately for you, the magma inside Vesuvius is unusually viscous, which partly explains why its eruption registers as a formidable 5 out of 8 on the logarithmically scaled Volcanic Explosivity Index, the same as the Mount St. Helens eruption in 1980. Fortunately, VEI-8 eruptions are quite rare. The most recent one occurred on New Zealand's Mount Taupo 26,500 years ago, and it destroyed an area the size of El Salvador. A volcano's explosive power largely depends on both how its magma forms and how it arrives at the surface, which, contrary to what one might assume, is not by bubbling up from the Earth's molten core. Magma doesn't form when the sinking crust melts in the heat of the Earth's depths either, at least not usually, because pressure increases the melting point of rock by strengthening its chemical bonds. So even as the heat rises deep within the Earth, so does the pressure, and the mantle remains solid. Instead, magma creation requires an unusual heat to rise closer to the surface, an unusual drop in pressure, or an unusual pollutant, generally water, to enter the mantle and lower its melting temperature. Your worrisome situation in Pompeii can be blamed on the latter. Footnote: water lowers the melting temperature of rock by weakening its chemical bonds. In other words, water does to rock what salt does to an icy road. An intrusion of water into the mantle is the process responsible for many of the world's most powerful volcanoes. In slabs beneath oceans, water can infiltrate into their structure, and because water lowers a plate's melting temperature, this seemingly innocuous seepage is the first step of an incredibly volatile reaction that has led to some of the most catastrophic eruptions in history. See Krakatoa, 1883. In your case, the slab at fault is the sliver of the African plate below the Adriatic Sea, which slid, and indeed continues to slide, beneath the Eurasian plate along Italy's east coast. When an oceanic plate with water in its structure submerges beneath a continental slab and dives toward the Earth's warmer core, the weakened mantle melts, and the lighter magma bubbles to the surface, liquefies the surrounding crust, and picks up new components. This doesn't always increase a volcano's destructive power, but as luck would have it, Mount Vesuvius is located on a thick bed of limestone. Limestone, CaCO3, plus heat, results in the volcanically unfortunate combination of calcium oxide and CO2. In other words, standing in Pompeii places you in the hazard zone of carbonated magma. It gets worse. It so happened that after Vesuvius's previous eruption, believed to have occurred in 217 BCE, lava may have cooled somewhere in its piping system to create a plug. This plug probably delayed the next volcanic eruption by hundreds of years, but by doing so, it dramatically increased the pressure building beneath the mountain so that when the magma finally dislodged the rock, shook the earth, and exited the vent on the top of Mount Vesuvius, it did so with spectacular power. As the lava depressurized, carbon dioxide and sulfuric gases rapidly came out of solution to create the magma-fueled jet engine, and the eruptive cloud of ash and gas rose in a formation called a Plinian Column, named after Pliny the Younger, who documented the Vesuvius eruption from across the Bay of Naples. Mount Vesuvius's column rose more than 12 miles high, far above the cruising altitude of passenger jets. But the trouble with the Mount Vesuvius eruption wasn't just its size. It was how many people lived so close. When I asked James Moore, a volcanologist and scientist emeritus at the U.S. Geological Survey, how best to survive an erupting volcano, he said it's quite easy. Don't live near one. Yet that is more difficult advice to follow than it might seem. It wasn't just bad luck that the Romans built their city at the base of a volcano. Instead, volcanoes tend to attract human societies because their previous eruptions can produce nutrient-rich soils. If the Pompeians had done any excavation, they might have found evidence of the massive Vesuvius eruption in 1995 BCE and the Bronze Age population it destroyed, but they didn't. Footnote. Or maybe they did and, like us, rolled the dice anyway. As a result, you and the rest of the Pompeians will find yourself 6 miles from the vent of Vesuvius with only 2 options. Run north or run south. If you run south and away from Vesuvius, it's a little unclear how far you'll need to go. We know that you'll need to run at least past the town of Stabiae, around 4.5 miles away, because that was where Pliny the Elder, the younger's uncle, died on the morning of the 25th. Second, if you run south, you'll also run in the direction of the prevailing winds, which means the Plinian cloud will continuously rain ash and pumice on you. At first, while the ash falls like snow, this may seem manageable, but as the eruption continues, the problem will only worsen. Eventually, the falling cloud will become so thick, day will appear as night. In his notes, Pliny the Younger described the darkness as not so much a moonless or cloudy night, but as if the lamp had gone out in a locked room. When I asked Petrone where the survivors of Pompeii went, he wrote that there's evidence of successful escapes to both north and south. However, he suggests you run north toward Naples and toward the eruption. The road between Pompeii and Naples was well maintained, he explains, and the written records of those who survived suggest that most of the successful escapees fled north, while most of the bodies of the attempted escapees, who admittedly left far too late, were found to the south. But if you do run north, you will need to move quickly because you'll pass through the small Roman resort town of Herculaneum on your way to Naples, and Vesuvius's first pyroclastic surge flowed through Herculaneum. Herculaneum sits barely 4 miles west of the volcanic vent, but for the first few hours of the eruption, the prevailing winds largely spared it from most of the ash and pumice. But when Vesuvius first tapped into the deeper magma that triggered its initial pyroclastic flow, the heated gas and ash blew through Herculaneum and killed everyone there almost instantly. Archaeologists have found scorch marks in the city that suggest the cloud may have been as hot as 930 degrees Fahrenheit when it engulfed Herculaneum's citizens. Because falling ash later encased the cloud's victims, archaeologists have been able to refill these spaces with plaster and recreate final poses that hint at the searing heat they experienced. These poses show almost no signs of the boxer-like defensive stance typically taken by victims of extreme heat, which suggests to Petrone that the Romans in Herculaneum died so quickly they never consciously registered discomfort. Petrone even found a glassy piece of brain matter in the skull of one Herculaneum victim, suggesting the cloud heated this person's brain so quickly it vitrified. If you don't want the same thing to happen to your brain, follow these instructions carefully. Purchase your bread no later than 10 a.m. and exit Pompeii as soon as you see the black cloud. Luckily, the bakery conveniently puts you on the road to Herculaneum. All you'll have to do is head north. Herculaneum is a little more than 9 miles from Pompeii, and the pyroclastic flow doesn't hit until around 2 p.m. That gives you 4 hours, which means you can maintain the average walking pace of 3 miles per hour and arrive in Herculaneum just after 1 p.m. Herculaneum was a beach resort town for the Roman elite. You'll find large, beautiful houses clad in marble and libraries filled with ancient Greek and Roman classics. Some of these houses may seem like enticing places to wait out the troubles, but obviously, that would be a mistake. Instead, you'll need to pass right through. If you want to be sure your brain remains unvitrified, you need to reach the outskirts of Naples, another 4 miles away. And to be extra safe, you should make it there within the hour, which means averaging a fast walk or jog. The speed might seem manageable, but the total distance from Pompeii to Naples is 13 miles, so unless you're in extraordinary shape, you need to pace yourself. Avoid overexertion in the late August heat and take any opportunity to drink fresh water. Crowds and obstacles may slow you down, but it might be surprisingly easy to get out of the city itself, at least if you leave quickly. Many residents initially take shelter, so you'll have an open window for your departure, which is critical for your survival. Probably only those who managed to understand from the beginning the gravity of the situation escaped in time, Petrone told me, And perhaps to motivate any rubbernecking time travelers, he showed me a picture of the vitrified brain he found. If you don't want that brain to be yours, don't stop, don't look around, and when you buy that bread, definitely get it to go.